This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomanosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and the state-of-the-art car wash Shell gas station in Malbus. Welcome, Dr. Lou. Good morning.
Well, thank you very much. A nice warm welcome, except it's a little chilly out there this morning compared to what we've had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see a little change in the weather.
Me
it's
too.
A little more Christmassy. Get us into the spirit.
That's right.
Okay. So, folks, another crazy week, I would say. Every time we come on Monday morning, practically have to say the same thing. Look at all the crazy things that have gone on. And now we're going to, you know, wait for El Presidente to tell us what he wants to do on Tuesday about the rise in the Omicron, you know, variant. The fact is that there is something going on with this variant, okay? There's all case levels are up. We know that. Hospitalization is up. But the interesting thing, though, is that this doesn't seem to be as deadly as either the Delta or the original COVID. So here's the dilemma. On the one hand, and if you watched any of the news shows over the weekend, they're beating this horse to death. This is more gloom and doom, okay? And you see the gloom and doom as manifested by closures, New York City's closing down various things. You've seen some of these NFL teams closing down, you know, attendance. This is just part of the scare tactics to continue the failed approach that we've seen with dealing with COVID. And I think that, you know, Laurie, we can Monday morning quarterback this all we want, and we're not doctors. I got that. But you know what? When you see what DeSantis has done in Florida, and you take a closer look at some of these other states like Texas, they're doing things that make it possible for those who don't want to take the vaccination, which will be another topic I'll talk to you in a minute about, mm-hmm. because the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals has gone back and said that OSHA is, in fact, capable of doing mandates. But we'll talk about that in a minute. But here you have certain states, and Florida, I think, really is the example that we should look to, where Governor DeSantis has been able to do everything in his power to limit the death rate by essentially starting what are called monoclonal
antibodies.
But he's got them all over the state, okay? So when you look carefully at these issues in total, okay, and you see how the Biden people are blaming the unvaccinated on all the problems, you see how this has become a political issue today, mainly because Biden made it a political issue in 2020. I mean, he basically said that any president who let 200,000 Americans die should not be president. Well, now he's already up to 380,000. We far surpassed the number of dead Americans on his watch. Okay? So let's examine this from the standpoint of, okay, he's Mr. Take Care of COVID, because Trump was incapable of doing it. So we haven't been able to do that. Again, the stat I just mentioned, he's got a lot more dead on his hands than what Trump did, number one. Number two, the argument that we're trying to deal with, you know, getting everyone vaccinated, that's the key. Well, unfortunately, we've had what have been classified as breakthrough cases where the vaccinated have actually got the virus. So on the one hand, they're blaming the non-vaccinated, and yet on the other hand, the solution to the problem, according to them, is getting vaccinated, and yet that's not exactly 100% foolproof. All right, so you've got a problem. So what do we do? I mean, is Biden going to come along Tuesday and say, well, it's so bad, we've got to have lockdowns like we did in 2020? Now, one can make the case that perhaps the lockdown was something to try. Everything was falling apart. Lots of people, you know, 15,000 people dead in New York City. Now, we know in retrospect that those deaths in New York City were entirely preventable because Cuomo put people with COVID back into the nursing homes and, you know, the things like that. So my point here is that are we going to repeat the past mistakes, or are we going to try to maintain a balance between getting back to, quote, normalcy, okay, dealing with this as one could possibly think is the right way to do it, as we're seeing in Florida. I mean, what DeSantis has done in Florida is absolutely amazing, okay? He's got the lowest rates of COVID death in the country. And so if what he's doing is working on that scale, why couldn't you make it work on a bigger scale?
Is he allowing more access to ivermectin and hydrochloroquine?
I believe so. The monoclonal things that he's doing, like with remdesivir, I think I get that right. That's one of the things, getting more people tested. The key to this is find out what's going on early and get you the kind of treatment that you need. I mean, but here in Alabama, we have had over 8,000 patients who have been treated by our concerned doctors, like Dr. Calderwood and others, and they have saved 8,000 people with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin.
I didn't know you were going to speak of this, so yeah. If I may read a brief message from a friend of mine,
okay,
who just recovered from COVID.
Okay.
She said, I woke up this morning feeling 100%. The monoclonal antibody infusion went wonderful. Between the ivermectin and the hydrochloroquine at the initial onset and on day four getting the infusion, I feel great. Please spread the news to all that you know so we can save lives. 800,000 people did not need to die from this. The medical profession is going to have a lot to answer for in the near future as this all comes to light. And so will the Biden administration.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I'm certainly glad to hear that your friend is doing well.
But why can't everyone have access to that? In her case, she was proactive. Many of us have been using connections of groups of doctors.
Right, exactly.
That you know, are prescribing.
Yeah, and you see, this is the kind of, you know, anecdotal evidence that supports what we're arguing about, okay? Now, studies that have come out certainly have shown that, and this is a South African and Israeli study, that Omicron is not as deadly. Yes, it's very, you know, contagious. And so what we're seeing is a spike in cases. But a spike in cases isn't the key issue. It's how deadly it is. And that's where you get into the situation where the hospitals get overwhelmed like they did in 2020. But once again, we get back to fundamental principles. What is the best way to handle this? And I think that, you know, if Biden goes down this road of trying to do a lockdown again, I think there's going to be massive revolts. I guarantee you, if Kay Ivey tries to support it, this place is going to go crazy. We're not going to sit by and let it happen. We will do exactly what the civil rights movement did in the 60s. We will peacefully protest and not go down this road. There's just no way that we can accept this kind of stuff. But once again, notice how we've got the big pharma industry with their billions of dollars in payments for doing the vaccine, which, again, I understand. Vaccines are fine. You know, we have flu vaccines and all like that. Unfortunately, this vaccine has not been fully tested. It was pushed through an emergency approach. It's certainly becoming clear that more people have been killed by it than what has been admitted so far, perhaps by a factor of 3 or 4. They have an undercount here in terms of deaths, which means that instead of the 30,000 that they've admitted to, it could be well over 100,000, okay? That doesn't even include the harmful effects. So here's what's going on. You've got people who are saying no to this whole business of the vaccine. Now, if the vaccine is the solution, okay, that's one part of an approach. But the second part has to be an inclusive approach that says anything that's working should be done. But you see, what happens is this is a direct assault on the money-making capability of Big Pharma, because they're the ones getting all the money out of this. Ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are cheap. They've known about it. In fact, in 2009, Fauci himself said hydroxychloroquine was a perfect way to deal with these COVID SARS problems. Yeah, I mean, you know, Lori's shaking her head. Exactly. What in the world is going on? And the what in the world is, you've got a monopoly that wants the money, and they're going to damn well keep it because they've got political clout to make sure that the CDC toes the line, that Fauci and them are all on board, and you've got Biden, who is bought and paid for anyway by whoever, not willing to stand up and say no, which leads me into this next question. Now, we've already talked about how this issue about the vaccinations are a problem, okay? And more and more people are saying no to the vaccine. We've gone through our own attempts to try to get the Baldwin County Board of Education to back away from advocating for universal vaccinations. More and more studies, as we've heard from D. Cox, you know, have shown that these younger people are susceptible to heart attacks. And this is an issue which has just swept through the country. And suddenly people are saying no to vaccines for, you know, any individual in any age group. So carefully think through what's going on now. We've been talking about this for at least the last 2 months, this question of the vaccine mandate. And employers who want to tell their employees that they have to have the vaccination in order to work, that was challenged during the special session. Health Freedom Alabama, led by Stephanie Dernan, down here, filed a really good bill, and that bill was HB 31. It did not get passed. They watered down another version of it. Came out SB9. SB9 does only one thing. It allows an employee to contest being fired on the basis of, you know, not taking the shot. That means you go through a process by which you gain a form, you turn that form into the Labor Department, and you hope that the case is heard in your favor. Okay. HB 31, on the other hand, basically said no. You have a constitutional right to put whatever you want in your body or not. And if businesses can't discriminate on the basis of race, religion, gender, why should they be allowed to discriminate on the basis of whether or not you have the vaccine? So all in all, that's the big issue that's out there. And recently, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals went ahead and said the OSHA mandate is now okay. 2 weeks ago, it was not okay. So now this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and we'll see how this goes. But the bottom line is, this is a constitutional issue that we are going to fight for down here, and we are going to stay in that fight. So, now, speaking of fights, the other thing I wanted to talk about this morning was this I-10 bridge project. And I don't think there's anyone who is not involved with this in government who is more qualified to talk about the I-10 bridge project than Kevin Spriggs. Kevin, good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you. How are y'all doing today?
Well, we're doing good. A little chilly, but better cool in Christmas than 95. Okay, I don't want to go to Florida for that. I guarantee you. So, so you know, Kevin, you and I have had a long history working together on dealing with this bridge project. Okay, and suddenly we see that there's this kumbaya moment over the summer where the bridge project was brought back up, the Eastern Shore MPO. And the the Mobile MPO, they got together, kind of brainstormed what they wanted to do, went back to ALDOT, and ALDOT came up with a plan which you and I have talked about. Okay, now that plan has been fundamentally modified, and one of the things that they did is ALDOT attempted to try to put together a briefing, which was done last week, and you and I were there along with several other people. And the outline of this project essentially is based on the fact that the current crossings were designed to carry 35,000 cars and trucks each day, and there are now nearly 100,000 cars and trucks crossing Mobile Bay. Okay, and their argument is by increasing road capacity, Baldwin and Mobile counties will see reduced traffic congestion, increased road safety, and improved hurricane evacuation. So that seems to be what's driving this. I think the bottom line is, and you just speak for yourself on this, but I would argue that the need for doing this project is there. Is that basically your sense?
Well, yes, let me correct you, because you said ALDOT, but actually it was the MPOs that had simultaneous meetings, and they had worked out a framework ahead of time, and I believe that ALDOT had input to this framework, but they wanted to get out a set of guidelines of what a project would actually have. And
yeah, you're right about that.
And ALDOT's original comeback was that they were going to institute this truck toll, and I think after they probably got their fingers and toes chopped off from the trucking industry and realized what a difficult proposal that was going to become, I think a lot of people just realized that it was not going to work. And so in this proposal to move forward, they created a framework. And again, this is the MPOs communicating back to ALDOT. Okay, so this is not the actual project. ALDOT still has to produce a project that will be within this framework. And so the guidelines that they issued had a number of things, that it would be a comprehensive plan, not a phased plan. So right. That kind of puts us back to the original, you know, engineering design that was in the first replacement proposal. Second, that they would be, that the state would be contributing $250 million to the project, utilizing also a $125 million federal grant.
Right.
Third, that there would be no toll options for commuters and local people to transverse or conduct their business. The fourth thing does bring back the toll, but that toll is limited not to exceed $2.50 per passenger.
Right.
And then the fifth component of this was that the project would remain public. In other words, ALDOT would still own the highway, still maintain the highway under federal guidelines, and be responsible for the maintenance. That there would be no private profiteering corporation involved in operating the system.
Right.
That's not to say they wouldn't use a contractor to, say, collect the toll, but those tolls would belong to ALDOT, not a foreign agency or corporation.
So, Kevin,
framework was agreed to by both MPOs, and in effect, this now puts the project back in ALDOT's lap to say, okay, this is what both MPOs on both sides of the bay have agreed to. Can we now produce a project that meets this framework?
Okay, so as you look at the framework and the five steps that you mentioned, okay, what stands out to you as the Well, let's put it this way. What are the two critical factors that you see in this framework that will either sink it or make it swim? What do you think?
Well, there are two critical factors here. One of the factors is the public willing to accept a toll? And in my mind, that's not necessarily the case, although the thinking is that with a 250 toll, that there would be sort of a compromised position among people that, you know, that didn't want any toll versus people that just thought the $6 was just outrageous and too
right.
expensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, within this framework, the 250 toll, too, has the constraints that once the project's debt is paid off, that toll is retired, and tolls cannot be used for any other purpose than paying off the debt on the project. And under this framework, you know, ALDOT would have to engage a substantial amount of debt to actually execute the project, because the price tag is still $2.1 billion probably larger now with the amount of inflation that we got this past year.
Yeah.
So to me, there's no guarantee that the public is willing to accept tolls for any reason, because there's some people out there that just believe that tolls are fundamentally wrong way to raise revenue.
Well,
we don't know what that opposition is going to be.
Yeah.
Second thing is that at $250 million, the state is really coming in very light. The financing structures that would have to be utilized to build this project is probably not going. I mean, $250 million as a state contribution is not going to be enough for the financing to be realistic. In other words, you can write it on a piece of paper that this is what it's going to be, but then when you go to the bond markets and the people that's going to actually write the checks, they're going to have constraints and parameters.
Right.
It's just like it's very hard for the average person to go pay zero down and buy a house. I mean, the people that finance houses are like, no, you're going to have to put 5, 10, 15, 20% down depending on what kind of interest rates you want on that house.
Yeah.
And in these markets for municipal bonds and TIFIA bonds and public activity bonds, they all have, the players that provide the capital, they dictate the terms and the conditions. And so at $250 million, this is coming in light, and I think that when ALDOT comes back, they have to come back with more money than that to make the project real.
Right. Well, it seems to me that those two critical factors are inherently political. I do know that when we were discussing this framework, we did point out to them that where it says any toll considered should not exceed 250, we tried to move them in the direction of shall not exceed 250, which I would assume is going to happen. But the political issue remains. The Block the Toll folks, led by Jim Ziegler, who have done a marvelous job in motivating people to stop the $6 toll. But the question now is, what is your sense of where they are after the 250 toll was released? What's your sense on that?
Well, just following the Facebook page that's still out there, and there's been a number of posts, from the news articles as a result of this agreement. That element of no tolls, no matter what, is still there. And part of it is, number one, some people just believe that that's not a good way to raise revenue. And then, number two, there's still a distrust factor that no matter what framework or what ALDOT says in the beginning, there's just no trust that after you get into the project that they won't change the parameters or end up charging more toll, or even later on when the toll's supposed to sunset, that they
right.
that they just don't live up to their word and do something else. I mean, there's just the bad thing about the original project that was proposed and that will be very difficult for us ever get away from is the lack of trust that ALDOT has created in trying to, you know, make that original proposal where they, in effect, would not have, maybe would not have spent any money to build the I-10 bridge and then took a $2 billion liability and walked away from it for 55 years. I mean, that's what they were trying to do with the original proposal. And now that they've been outed, guess what? Nobody trusts them, right? I mean, or at least some people don't trust them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems to me that the trust question is very real. We mentioned it at the MPO meeting, and you and I had discussed this whole question about, you know, is this just a ploy by Ivy to make nice down here after she just completely dumped all over these people down here, screwing them with a $6 toll and then getting mad about the fact that the Eastern Shore MPO curtailed it and just gave her a black eye, and all she did was get mad about it. So, you know, it seems to me that, you know, the lack of any kind of positive leadership from the governor really creates a lot of doubt as to whether or not she's serious about this. So, I mean, I think it feeds into the distrust.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And coming from the position of where they are now, where, you know, they, you know, where the trust was, you know, and credibility was damaged greatly by the original project, that's why I'm saying now this has been tossed back into their court. And if this is a serious, if they take this framework seriously, then, you know, what's the financial commitment? Because, you know, a lot of times, especially in these types of projects and et cetera, your financial input is kind of a measure of how serious and how committed you are to a project. And,
right.
And so, you know, what they come back with and how much they're actually willing to commit to the project up front, and how much in terms of are they willing to guarantee with existing state funds, are they willing to guarantee these bonds so that they can actually be financed? That'll tell us if it was a serious proposal or if it was just a political initiative to get the governor past the May primary.
Well, I think you put your finger on it right there. And here again, that's the second part of this is a political consideration as to just exactly what are the state's priorities. They said at the, you know, these various meetings that we've been to that this is a, you know, a high priority in the state. So that's all fine and dandy. But, you know, when Senator Albritton, who is the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, you know, continues to say that, you know, there is a north-south problem here as to whether or not the priority is actually going to be, you know, handled the way we kind of hope it will be handled, which means that, you know, we're back to the amount of money that can be bonded out, what's going to be put into it, how much is that going to be, and that's going to lead directly to, you know, the viability of the project. And so, you know, it
right.
if anything, I would argue of those two political problems, I think that the public will be more willing to accept a 250 toll given the need and the fact that we can make the case this is necessary. I don't know if the political process will work to our favor in terms of getting the bonding necessary to really fulfill what you say is a commitment. And that remains to be seen, I think.
Well, and the problem is out there, you know, that it really the federal government should be underwriting the or actually paying for most of this type of project, because this is a, you know, coast to coast major infrastructure component that, I mean, when you have a dozen states that are using this highway, you know, this really should be a federal funded project. And why I say the state's coming in light at $250 million, the federal government coming in at $125 million is absolutely pathetic.
Yeah.
But the deal is, in Washington, as we all seen the current political environment, their attitude is they don't necessarily want to increase capacity on highways because they want the attitude is the unimportant people just need to get on a bus or train to go to wherever they want to go.
Oh, yeah, all the part of this climate change strategy.
To use their own vehicles to go somewhere when we want and where we want. The Marxist Democrats in Washington don't like that.
Yeah, well, it's true. They don't. They see all of this as, creating the very green problems that they're trying to fix.
No, the fact is, Dr. Liu, you and I are not important enough to have our own vehicle to come and go when we decide we need to come and go, okay? Now, if we become part of the regime, sure they'll have an exemption.
I don't think that's going to happen, Ken.
We can get a special license to have a gasoline vehicle to go when and where we want, without having to get a permit from the state.
Kevin.
But you got to be a part of the regime to enjoy that privilege.
Well, listen, Lori's giving me the eye. It's time. Unless you want to pay a couple of $100 extra for this morning
stop.
To continue. This.
I figured you had some parting thoughts.
I know. So at any rate, I really want to thank you for coming on. Your insights are just, what we need to sort through these kinds of problems that we're going to see here just in the near future. So thanks for coming on. We'll be in touch. Thanks, Kev.
Thank you, Kevin. And for your
thanks, and have a good day.
Your
sponsorship
Bye-bye.
Of this show, very right. important to get the information out.
Well,
that
the thing
you
about
funding.
Him, he knows this issue. I mean, that's it. He's got a great mind that he's able to, use his skills to understand these things.
I'd like to get more into the regime.
Yeah, well...
In the beginning of the show, when you were questioning what's Biden going to say and do, and why is some of this happening, I bit my tongue. I'd love to get into that more.
Well, Fauci was on NBC Meet the Press, and he went through the listing of things that he thought Biden's going to say. And like he said, he doesn't want to get ahead of the president, but it's going to be just more of the same, except if Biden... is feeling the pressure because of he's now in way beyond what Trump, lost in terms of deaths, and he's the one who put that card down there, then he better start producing something. So is his fear going to be that if he doesn't do something really striking, like locking down, then he's going to get blamed for all of this? I don't know. I mean, all I can say is the DeSantis model is where Biden should be going, but I doubt seriously if he's going to go there. And here's our problem, folks, because Monday, the 27th, may very well be a holiday for us. So Lori and I have to figure out,
It will be.
It will be a holiday. So you all are just going to be with bated breath waiting for us to come back. But... I certainly want to, wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we will see you after the Christmas break.
Yes.
What's the date that we're coming back? The 3rd of January, I think.
January 3rd is correct.
Okay, 10 o'clock?
Yes.
10:05, January 3rd. Until then, God bless you and the United States of America and our great state. Take care. Happy New Year. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Liu. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Liu Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program, you want to hear it again or tell a friend, it will be posted at WABF1480.com.